From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler.
Charlene Fix is a professor at the Columbus College of Art and Design and a poet and a literary critic who is joining us today as a member of this year's featured authors at the 2014 Ohioana Book Festival. Welcome, Charlene Fix.
Thank you.
Well, so you kind of flinched when I said critic there. my instinct is to hone in on that and find out what's difficult. But tell me about being a poet and a critic.
Okay. Well, I think I'm mostly a poet. That is when I'm writing poems. That's okay. One of those things where you feel like you have to keep earning the label. I write criticism occasionally, only when I really feel compelled to try to work something out that I've been thinking about, and usually for a long time. Some of the critical pieces I've written have evolved over years and years. Okay. So I always think about people who are under tenure pressure and have to produce, and none of the critical writing I've done has happened that way. It has just sort of risen up slowly and stayed with me for a long time and just kind of felt like I had to get it down on paper and work it out.
But your books of poetry are not the same way. I'm sensing a different creative process here.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I'll describe maybe the criticism first and contrast it to the poetry.
Sure.
You get an idea. You notice something in an author or in the case of Harpo Marx's Trickster, just a lifetime of watching those films and then kind of having this idea and then saying, what does that mean? And doing a lot of research to come to terms with what a trickster is and then watching the films and taking notes. The process took 10 years to write that book. That's partly because I teach full time and there's really no time to work on those kinds of projects during a semester.
Okay.
So it was sort of put it down, pick it up, put it down, pick it up. But it's a very different process, and it's sort of like it's out there and you're trying to gather it, but it already sort of exists and you're ordering it. And maybe poetry isn't all that different from that, but there are stages, they're clearly defined. You gather material, you take notes, then you start composing, then you revise it, and you look for the shape of the thing. Harpo Marx's Trickster was a whole book. I thought it was an article. You know, I thought, oh, that's an idea. I think I'll write an essay about that. And then I woke up one morning, I kind of saw the spine of the book. I was like, oh no, there's already too much to do. It was way too big for just an article.
That's a great imagist poetry sort of moment there, where you saw the spine of the book.
I saw the spine of the book.
And you knew you had to fill that spine with text.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of your poetry writing. You've got a new book out called Frankenstein's Flowers.
Yep.
And I think that's partially how you're at the Ohioana Book Festival.
Mm-hmm.
2014 is one of their featured authors.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Okay, well, this is a book that, I'm going to grab it here. It has a beautiful cover. You can't see it on the radio, but it is a painting by a colleague of mine in the Fine Arts Department, Anita Dawson. It's a painting called Tryst, and it just kind of rhymes with the poems in numerous ways, so I'm really thrilled she let me use it for a cover image. The book is divided into it has three sections, but basically all the poems sort of riff off of stories in the various ways that we get stories in the culture. They don't retell the stories, they just were inspired by the stories. The first section alludes a lot to myth, mostly the Persephone myth, a few others towards the end of that section. The second section alludes to books or riffs off of books or starts with pondering about a book but goes somewhere else. And the third section, films. And I think those kind of are the ways we get stories. There's even a little TV in there.
Okay.
Not much. Just the radar weatherman.
The radar weatherman. Oh, not radar on MASH, but the radar
weatherman. No, that computer voice. So, I think that might be the only television.
Okay.
Although I've watched many a film on television, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a perhaps you'd like to share, you had talked about one of the central poems, the poem for which the book is named,
okay,
is Frankenstein's Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a book poem, actually, that I found online, and other people were commenting on it and talking about it as a piece of work,
mm-hmm,
and positively so.
Okay. Well, I will read. Do you want me to read that poem?
Sure, if you're.
Okay. I'll just talk about it a little bit. My husband and I were watching the old Boris Karloff, James Whale director, Frankenstein, and it's such a beautiful film, and it's we both admire it. But my husband really liked it. So I turned to him and said, why don't you write a poem about this? And he said, why don't you write a poem about this? So, and I just at that very moment literally got off the couch, went upstairs and wrote this poem. And it's one of those few, I think poets consider those sort of gift poems. They just, there it is. And it's whole, and you don't really, I'm not saying I didn't work it after that process, after that initial draft, but it was just kind of there. Yeah. It really talks about a scene in the film where everybody runs screaming from the creature, except for a little girl named Mary. And they have this beautiful interlude at the riverbank where they play together. And then a tragedy happens, partly because of his innocence. He doesn't quite get the situation. He doesn't understand that she's not a flower, I suppose. Okay, and I guess I'll read it. The poem, let's let the poem speak for itself. Frankenstein's Flowers. There's logic to the scene. The man whose bones are currency, whose scalp was born divorced, grins at the little girl filling his knuckly resurrected hands with flowers. His eyes, hosed to heart, missed. Boat, she says, tossing one then another plop to the water's brink. Oiled like ducks and splayed like little suns, they float. And his brain, struggling against worm damage and unaccustomed thoughts, his cold and tropic nature warming at the fire of the child, he falls into giddiness, so he lifts her in his arms. What can he gather himself together to know? She's flower, light. Light glances off the water. Flowers float.
That's very nice. So when you write something like that, you said you worked on it afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
You said it burst full-formed from your head, like
yes.
Athena from the head of Zeus,
right.
Or something like this.
Right? Yeah.
So tell me about the working of that, not necessarily specifics,
right.
But you're working through the ideas, you're describing the scene, mm-hmm. And how does that function for you?
Yeah, and honestly, I don't remember the process of that particular poem okay. very well, but I don't think anybody likes the blank paper, although I do love paper. And pens. But should I jump up and down on the couch for that
yes,
one?
Yes, yes. Would you? I love paper.
I love paper.
Always the sign of a great interview when someone declares their love for an inanimate object.
Absolutely. When okay. I started writing, I didn't write for about 10 years. I was raising kids and whatever. And before I started writing again, I started buying a lot of paper. I remember telling some students, I just keep going into these paper stores and buying paper.
Like what kind? Like bulk?
Well, bulk paper. Yeah, legal pads. Just, I loved paper. And so I think I was getting ready unconsciously to start writing again.
You didn't think that was something you should talk to a therapist about, a paper fetish? No?
No.
Okay.
No. But the process, you know, that's my process. I mean, the beats were like first thought, best thought. And yes, they did revise, but maybe not always and not all the time. I'm really the opposite. I just get a lot down on paper and I have to sort of find the poem in that mess and chisel away at it.
Does that impact the way that at CCAD you talk to your students about writing? Are you a teacher that says, look, we're going to do a whole lot of drafts and chisel away and find the form from amidst all the other stuff that you've written? Is that
I think so. I think really almost everyone who teaches writing understands that that's how writers work. Trying to convince students of that, you know, that like that paper you wrote the night before, unless it is possible to work it over in your mind and write a really great first draft. But most of the time it doesn't happen that way. And there is something physical about actually the physical act of writing and emptying your head on paper that you surprise yourself. Things most poets have that experience over and over again. You really don't begin a poem with a thesis. You just start writing, and the poem takes you where it's going.
This suggests to me maybe you're a longhand kind of writer. You're not a computer person.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm old. Old writer. So I began on a typewriter, and that was a laborious process to go right. through multiple drafts on a typewriter because you had to basically retype the whole thing. I do draft on paper with a pen. Yeah, mm-hmm. I do. But sometimes, once in a while, I do draft on the computer, and that's kind of recent. And I think a lot of young people today just begin on the computer, which, of course, is creating kind of a sad thing for literary scholarship, because all that, all those drafts, that wonderful book Yeats at Work, where we can see him build a poem into greatness, the drafts are gone when you're working on it. I mean, I guess you could keep printing them out and filing them, but most people don't do that. They just get rid of that line and it's poof, gone.
Well, that's why I think Google created Google Drive, right? Because it keeps your iterations on the server. That later on, after you've become famous, you can come back and look at all the mess. But I imagine everyone will erase that long before.
Well, I was saving drafts and bags behind the door in the attic. And then my husband cleaned the attic and those were gone.
Was that a moment of tension there? Was that something you said, how dare you take those bags out of the attic?
No, because they were such a mess. I mean, I'd be working on, you know, 20 things at a time and just throwing things in that bag, and it would have been impossible for anyone to make sense of it.
Okay.
So
is that a story you share with your students to say, look, this is what happens when you draft enough. You have bags that you then have to work your way through. It sounds, you know, like you've got a metaphor there of baggage, right? That you're really someone better writing than I will take that. That's your next poem.
Yeah, maybe. Baggage. It rhymes with garbage.
So you're also going to be at the Ohio Anna Book Festival.
Yes.
So you've been there before, but this time as a featured person.
Yeah.
So tell me about that experience and being at Ohio Anna and being, you know, I know that it's not, you haven't gone through the featured author experience.
But never.
But you've seen them witnessed it. So tell me what it's like to go there and interacting with some of the people there.
Well, I always loved going to the readings at Ohio Anna, and it was interesting because David and I were emailing and, you know, making suggestions to each other. And I said, what about the readings? And he indicated that they weren't all, I mean, those were the things I looked forward to. And I think other writers did, but I guess they weren't as well attended as the panels. So now it's pretty much panels, which is writers maybe of similar genre or, you know, I don't know. There are topics for the panels that, people hear the conversation about writing, and sometimes pieces will be read during that conversation. So I love being in the audience. This is a new
thing.
Okay. This is new, but I was at a table last year. I had Harpo Marx's Trickster came out last year, so I participated in the festival as an author, but not a featured author. I was on a panel, but I mostly nodded my head.
Is that, do you think, indicative of being a poet where you're savoring the words and being economical with them and just nodding and saying yes at some point?
Well, you know, I think it was Keats said poets are boring individuals because they have negative capability. They're like vessels that are filled with whatever's going on around them, and they don't necessarily, I think the poets in the audience are probably appalled, but I think that, you know, you have to be sort of glib and outgoing and
so those are the fiction
extroverted.
Writers.
Extroverted.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. I don't know. Poets can be shy and quiet, contemplative.
That suggests that maybe that we're in, since poetry seems to be going through both a lull on one hand, sort of maybe classical poetry, and something more like poetry slams are much more active and outgoing.
Oh,
do you
that's
see
true.
That sort of bifurcation there? You say that, you know, now we've really got this division on what poetry is. And then, you know, certainly there's a case for rap to be in there. I don't know really how well that gets taken up at colleges or departments of English. But is that something that you're keeping your pulse on?
Yeah, definitely. Every year I judge usually the preliminary rounds of the Columbus Poetry Slam, and it's always very moving, and there are always wonderful pieces read. I tend to be a writer for the page. I'm not a performance poet, although I don't think I'm all that bad at reading, but it's not a performance. And I even participated once in a reading called Page Meets Stage, where a performance poet and I went back and forth, and it was a lot of fun, and she was really great. It was a little intimidating, maybe, but...
How did you prepare for that?
Well, we talked about... we tried to read things that were touching upon the same themes so that there would be a good contrast between, it wouldn't be apples and oranges. So there really wasn't a way to prepare for it.
Okay. I'm just curious whether you were like that scene in the Eminem movie where he's in the bathroom reciting things in the mirror to himself to get himself psyched up to go out and perform. But that's...
Oh, I think poets do practice for readings just because you want to be really familiar, you know, with what you're reading and keep it moving.
Okay.
Yeah. So
tell me, we had talked earlier that you're a professor at CCAD. What kind of other advice is the advice that you find yourself giving to young writers the most? And I'm thinking more creative writers, or if you're more frequently doing introductory composition, anything along those lines. What do you tell them?
Well, you know, it depends on what we're talking about, but if we're talking about the craft, I think the biggest lesson that I can impart to my poetry students, and I do teach poetry writing there, and I always take kind of a silent oath to myself at the beginning, do no harm. It's sort of like the medical, the Hippocratic Oath, because poetry is a skittish thing, and a poetic voice coming out of an individual is not to be tampered with. You want to help the student develop that voice, but you don't want to redirect that voice into your voice. So it's tricky. But I think that the one thing I really try to impress upon students is to allow the body to enter the poem, the reader's body, to let the reader into the poem, that the poet should sort of disappear and the language of the poem should be inhabited and breathed by the reader. And the way you do that is with sensory detail. Images. If you don't have an image, reach for a figure, a metaphor, a simile, a personification, an allusion to something. So I think that my two biggest lessons, I'd spend a good part of the beginning of the semester talking about images and figures to them. And I don't, you know, even though, poems aren't essays, but on some level it's all language, it's all the artful use of language. I consider the essay an art form. So a lot of the lessons are the same. Ideas are really important, but you have to give life to the ideas. It can't exist on an abstract general plane. And that's what the sweat comes in when you try to give it life and make it physical and make it vivid to the reader. It's easy to sit around and riff on abstract ideas, I suppose. But, probably my philosophy colleagues' heads are spinning as I say that, because that's a very different kind of writing.
Right.
Also.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we're not going to talk philosophy, I mean, kidding.
Yeah.
To all the philosophy people out there. Well, Charlene Fix, I want to thank you very much for talking to me today on craft and talking about your work and the fact that you'll be at the Ohioana Book Festival. And people can go to our website and see that, and then they can come out and see you. You will be on a panel, but perhaps you'll be able to read another poem or something like that. Or people can come up and request, right? And
say,
hey, I need Frankenstein's flowers right now. And you can just burst forth with Frankenstein's flowers. Sound good?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. I'll probably be on a couple panels.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.